I remember there was one year where I hit Kyle Clifford, who plays for LA now. I caught him with his head down and I hit him, and he got up, looked at me, didn't say a word, and I just knew, okay, here we go. And we both just dropped our gloves, and that was it.
Everybody, today, I'm talking to a great guy, man. Listen to this last name, Zanetti, man. Tell me this isn't an Italian name. How this guy ended up in hockey, I don't know, man. He's a Canadian, but I don't believe it. I think he's part of the mafia. But he's a bad boy, man. He's a bad boy. He's a hockey player. I have a kindred spirit with hockey players. Played when I grew up, but not like this guy. This guy's a pro. And I wanted to get into the mindset of hockey players. And you know, there's so many sports out there that you can get into. Hockey's a particularly tough sport. I've always thought pound for pound the toughest people out there. I mean, there are bigger people, there are MMA, football players, all sorts of tough guys out there and women. But these guys, they don't do that stuff. They just show up, they play, they work out, and they fight. Tough guys, and I'm curious about the mindset. The sport's great. I want to talk a little bit about that, and I want to introduce Mark right now to the audience. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, and what an introduction that was. It's exciting. It's exciting to be on the pod and just talk about some stuff and shoot it around a little bit.
Let's get into it, man. You're a Canadian. You grew up in Ontario. You're playing hockey at a really young age. Your parents, grandparents encouraged you to do this stuff. Why did they encourage you to play hockey?
That's a good question. So, you know, when I was really young, I have two younger brothers and a younger sister. The age 2, 4, and 6, my brothers and I all went on the ice, and my dad said, okay, go for a skate. And, you know, I fell in love with it right away. I'm the oldest. So I was always just chomping at the bit to get back on the ice on those free skates and those public skates. And, you know, one thing led to another. I think around 6, 7, 8 years old, I joined like a little tyke team and just fell in love with it. Was always the last kid off the ice. Was always excited to get up in the morning to go to practice. And I guess thank my dad because he's the one who just kept bringing me out there no matter what time of the day it was. So just fell in love with the game. And it's gotten me to where I am today, and I'm forever grateful for that.
In hockey, there are specialties. There are wing positions, center position, defensive positions, obviously the goalie. And each of these positions has to perform in a particular manner. And you all have to manage somehow to perform synergistically, which sometimes doesn't look like is happening, but it is always happening. But you stood out as a defensive. That's tough because you got to take the offense from the other team, obviously, rushing at you. You got to face off with those guys, and you've got to do everything from take them down, knock them down, get in front of a 90. How fast does the puck go on a slap shot?
I think mine was once clocked at, I don't know what it is in miles, but maybe 160 kilometers, 180 kilometers.
I think the fastest that I knew, miles per hour, it's like 120 miles. It's fast. And that puck is hard. And you guys do stuff like get in front of it. It's crazy enough that you guys are out there sliding around on metal blades. But, you know, it's basically a controlled boxing match where, you know, mostly it's hockey. But in between hockey, there's, you know, a few boxing matches that shake out.
Yeah, for sure. And just to touch up on the blocking shots, there was, you know, I definitely take pride in my defensive game. And, you know, I love blocking shots as much as they suck and as much as they hurt. You know, blocking a shot for me is like, you know, score. I wouldn't say scoring a goal, but it's like, it's nice when you come to the bench and all the boys give you a tap on the shins and, you know, say good job. So, yeah, blocking a shot for me is huge.
But, I always say, you know, at your level, blocking a shot is like taking a bullet for the team.
Yeah. Especially when you're waking up the next morning with a bruise the size of a baseball on your leg or your calf. Those ones are always fun.
Oh man, I haven't been so fortunate as to ever have to get in front of a 120 or even a 50 mile an hour puck and block it. So I'll leave that for pros like you. What do you think it was about your particular talent that made you a better or a standout defensive player rather than a standout offensive player? You were exceptionally good at defense, at fighting the offensive team, coming down the ice, knocking them down, pushing them off to the side, breaking up a play. What was it in you that made you excel in that area?
I'd probably say my size. I'm definitely one of the bigger guys on the ice. And, you know, offensively, usually get the smaller guys or the shiftier guys. And, you know, I'm not going to dangle through their team. If anything, I like to say I have a pretty good slap shot. So I'm a shooter, but just defensively, I would say my size and my quickness on my feet laterally and just, I guess, boxing guys out in front and getting in front of pucks and, you know, making that first pass out of our zone is just stuff I take pride in on the ice and just taking care of my body off the ice and doing whatever I can to stay healthy.
You're one of those athletes that takes offense when the opposing offense is coming down the ice and thinks that they can put it in the net. You sort of have an attitude of, F you, you're not getting by me. And if you do, And if you do, I'm going to make you pay a hard, hard price for it.
Yeah, you could say that for sure. You know, usually I play with a defense partner who is more offensive so that they can join the rush whenever they can. And I'm kind of like quarterbacking and just watching the play develop. And like you said, when they come down on me, it's my job to keep the puck out of the net and just put up a wall as best as I can.
You know, the team play is a bit elastic. And here's what I mean by that. A minute ago, we were talking about how you play synergistically. You got all five of you guys, all six, goalie included, but especially the five on the ice have to play synergistically, know what's going on, pay attention. So it's very elastic, but there are moments where it becomes extremely compartmentalized. For example, using the same ideas we've been expounding on here, when the offense is coming down the ice and there's a breakaway, it ends up being between you and that individual. It's not synergistic in that moment. Everything's come apart. It's all about you, just you, you alone. And the goalie. The goalie's got to pay attention to what you're doing. You've got to make sure you're defending in a way that gives him a view. The offensive guy is doing everything he can to fool you and the goalie at the same time. It becomes that small. I mean, the only way it gets smaller is on a true breakaway when it's just between the goalie and the breakaway player. But in those moments, isn't it interesting that it's not a team game anymore in those moments? And those moments happen all the time. So that's why I say elastic. It goes from this big game of six people on the ice per team playing synergistically, working together, setting up plays, to those moments where there are breakaways and it becomes a game of just one or two people.
Yeah, and it's not even just on the breakaways. You can talk about one-on-one battles all over the ice, really. You know, there's a battle.
You could, but isn't it true that even when – let me give an example. Let's say I dump it into the corner. All right. Now my left winger goes in there to start digging it out. It's true that that's a one-on-one battle, but that synergy is still happening because you got the center, the right wing, the defensive guys in position, and they're all sort of in that play, even though they're outside. They're waiting for the outcome. They're still part of it. Isn't that true?
When you say it like that, of course, yeah, that's 100% correct.
So there's the one-on-one battles in that context, but it's still a team sport. But that's one of the things I find so fascinating about this game is that it's synergistic in a big way. Then it's synergistic in a not-so-big way. One guy is having that one-on-one battle to dig the puck out and get it to somebody. But you're all involved, but you're standing around and waiting or moving and adjusting and getting into the right position, you know, looking for that pass out from the corner. And then there's that moment where it gets even smaller, like you and the guy in the breakaway and your goalie or just the goalie alone. It's different levels of concentrated and less concentrated play.
Yeah, when you say it like that, that's hitting it on the head for sure.
And maybe I should be the coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, take a flight over.
Yeah, find out if there's any room on the bench there for me to start talking shit to you guys. You guys who get this guy out of here, man. As a young guy, you were encouraged to try out for the Toronto Marlboros. Who are they? Tell us how that happened. Who are they, and why did that matter?
When I was younger, I'm sure there's still one. That's the team everyone wanted to play for. They got the Maple Leaf on their jersey. And
are they a farm team for the Maple Leafs?
Yes and no. The Maple Leafs have their AHL squad, which is called the Marlies, but the minor hockey organization has no affiliation with the Marlies. And when I was growing up, the Marlies were always the best team, and that's what everyone wanted to play for. So when I had the opportunity, when I had a chance, and my dad thought we had a chance to make the team, we went to try out, and I played there for 7 years, my whole minor hockey career, which in this day and age, kids are jumping ship every year, trying to find a better team or a better coach or a different situation. But I was loyal to the team, and there were three of us actually who played for the Marlies for all 7 years of minor hockey. And, you know, we were always a really good team, always a team to beat. And it was a lot of fun growing up.
And you kept moving up as you were growing up. You kept moving up. Now, I'm going to mention the name of the next team here. And I just want the audience to understand that just because a team's got a funny name, it doesn't mean they're great. I mean, think of the Anaheim Ducks. I mean, who came up with that? You know, that's not a very impressive name. There's a college in California, very solid water polo program. It used to be anyway. I don't know where they are now, called the Irvine Anteaters. You know, there's the Oregon Ducks. I mean, I don't know who comes up with these names. And they get worse. I mean, there are even worse names out there. But here's a funky name, the Markham Waxers. You played for them, you know. But that's a big jump for you because that's an Ontario Junior League, you know, as a major, right?
Correct. So I was drafted to Ottawa in the fifth round. And I didn't make the OHL team out of camp, which I understood going in because I was a fifth round pick. So I played junior A, which is like a buffer in between. I was 16 years old playing with kids, or I guess men, up to 21. And, you know, playing for the Markham Waxers. I played with a good buddy of mine, actually, who was with me on the Marlies, too. So we went there together and played a lot. developed well. I don't know if on the league pages it says that. But we went really far in the playoffs that year. We played like 20 or 24 games in the playoffs that year. And it was a lot of fun. Played with a lot of older guys, guys who I still talk to today. And just was, I think it was a big stepping stone in my career, because for a 16-year-old to play the full year in the OHL is tough. I got to live at home playing for Markham, which was, I think, big for me. And, you know, my mom loved it too. So it was good. It was a good year for me and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, very, very good. And it keeps going from here. So I'll let you tell the story. You were called up to fill a vacancy for on the Ottawa 67 team for six games. Tell us how that happened. What's that about? And why is that a great thing?
Yeah. So around, I don't know, I would say November 15th, middle of November, I got a call from Brian Kilray, legendary coach. And he goes, we want you to play six games for us over Christmas. And I was like, wow, okay, this is kind of weird. I didn't expect this call at all. So I said, okay, let me talk with my parents. And, you know, obviously in my head, I'm already thinking for sure I'm going to go. So I hang up the phone, call my dad right away. He's all excited, all fired up. My mom's all excited. But yeah, I played six games for them between, I think, December 26th. Yeah, it was over 2 weeks. December 26th and January 5th. I remember that pretty vividly, actually. And that was a great experience just to get my feet in the door in the OHL level. And, you know, meet some of the guys, experience playing in bigger stadiums. You know, in junior A, you play in front of 2,000 people max. In the OHL, Ottawa used to have, I think, 10,000 people every game. So it was a big jump for me, and I really enjoyed it. You know, Ottawa, what a city Ottawa is. It was just a great six games, and, you know, my whole family came out to watch, my uncles and aunts. It was hilarious. I remember the GM asking me how many tickets I needed for those first couple of games, and I said 10 or 12, and he goes, oh, I guess we'll get you a box then. So it was fun and it was great. I loved it.
Well, you had during your first season, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, roughly 17 points, 2 goals, 15 assists in 66 games. You know, just correct me here if I'm wrong, which a lot of people viewed as a really solidifying performance as a rookie to watch. And in that same season, by the way, getting back to the beginning of our conversation, you established yourself as a physical force as well, leading the team. All right. The leader of the team with 102 penalty minutes, man. So here comes the fighting I was talking about. I told you, man, what's up with all that?
It was my draft year, I think, to the NHL. And,
I think it's the Italian in you. See, you were the leading fighter on the team because you got that hot blood.
Yeah. You can say that too, I guess. Sure. I don't know if I would say I like fighting, but I did enjoy.
Let's say you weren't afraid of it. You weren't afraid of it.
Yeah, I wasn't afraid of it. Exactly. You know, I didn't like taking shit from people. So, you know, any chance that something came up, I would stand up for myself and I would never really look for it. But if it came to me, I would answer the bell. You know, it's something that happens in the game and something that I'm comfortable doing. It was fine for me anyway.
Yeah, well, as a leader in it, clearly you were fine with it. No question about that. I just got a question about the fights. It seems obvious to me, but I want to get it from the player's point of view. It just seems obvious to me what's going on. Someone gets hit too hard, cross-checked when they, you know, that's illegal now. Something pisses off a player, they turn their words, usually a couple of words spoken, and then the gloves come off. But that's what it looks like from the stand. What's happening down there in the moment? What's the basic theme? Is it that simple? Just something stupid happens, you're pissed off, the game's on the line, or you don't like the person and you just get into a fight because someone did something they didn't like? Or is it deeper than that?
It depends, but usually it's just if someone hits you the wrong way, or someone hits especially the star player the wrong way, there's going to be gloves coming off, just the way it is. But I remember there was one year where I hit Kyle Clifford, who plays for LA now. I caught him with his head down and I hit him and he got up, looked at me, didn't say a word. And I just knew, you know, okay, here we go. And we both just dropped our gloves and that was it. So it kind of depends. Sometimes you chirp back and forth. Sometimes you just, you know what's coming. And sometimes it's just heat of the moment. So that's just the way it is. It's pretty interesting.
Well, it's a tough game. Before I ask this or bring up this next issue, let me ask you, what's the difference? What's the relationship or spread difference between the OHL and the NHL?
Oh, I would just say the skill level, hands down to the skill level. Even just watching now in the NHL, like some of these highlights, some of these kids are just nuts. Stuff that, like, you know, I just never seen before, and stuff that is just crazy what they do with the puck. And even defensively, how guys get in front of pucks and block shots, it's just, it's a different game. And I would say that the NHL is just years, just leaps and bounds ahead of the OHL. It's quite a jump to go from the OHL to the NHL.
What are they doing? What are the younger, I assume it's a younger generation. Let me give an analogy. In poker, there's a game called Texas Hold'em. You've probably heard of it. And it was played a particular way for a long time. And then the California style came along. And it's a very, very aggressive, sometimes reckless game of just super bluffing and just playing very aggressive, and it sort of changed the way the game is played, and you have to understand the player type at the table and who you're up against to know how to play your hand when you've got that kind of player or players at the table. So they've changed the game due to their crazy aggressive nature on the flop, turn, flop, river. Is something like that going on when you describe the crazy skill level, seeing things you've never seen before? It just made me think of how the California style, you know, the old timers said the same thing. It's like it's a style of play. It's rough. It's aggressive. You're getting pushed around by these guys. Is there something going on that's particularly notable? I mean, the skill level has obviously gone way up, but is there something different or new, or are they just more aggressive in the way they do the same things?
I was actually in the car today with one of my friends, and we talked about how much less physical the NHL is and just how much more skill there is going on. And, you know, of course, when you go to playoffs, it's a lot more physical, it's way more hitting and fighting. But even just watch it, I watch the highlights every morning here, and it's wild to see, like, there's very few big hits now, and it's just more playing with the puck and finding the open man. And if anything, like, we make the analogy or the joke that sometimes you pass the puck into the net because you're making so many great passes in a row that guy back door is just wide open, and you pass into the net. You're not even shooting anymore. You're just passing into the net. I just think that, especially this year and last year, I've really noticed how much the skill level has gone up.
You know, that makes a lot of sense what you just said, because the game isn't as violent or as physical in terms of the fight. It's still very, very physical. No one should be misled that when you say it's less physical. It's a pleasant, gentle, sweet game where everyone's, you know, coddling each other. It's not like that. It's still a very, very physical game. But what you just said makes sense, because it is nowhere near as rough as it was in the early days. And that allows people to actually play the game more and get better at the game and not be as concerned going from one end of the ice to the other, getting hip-checked or cross-checked or slashed or tripped up, because the penalties just add up. They just add up, and no one wants a power play, because what's the average percent of success on a power play?
You want to be around 25 to 30. 30% is crazy, but I would say above 25% is good.
Yeah, so you're scoring. Over the course of a season, you're getting free goals. They're not free. I don't mean it quite like that, but the advantage is way to the team with the power play. So you're not going to – I'm just drawing this idea that maybe the insanity in terms of skill level, skill sets, and ability to play more, pass more is because players can now see the ice more and the game more, and it can unfold more without having to have three sets of eyes for where's the player, where's the puck, and where's the two or three guys that are going to knock me down.
I totally agree. Yeah.
There's less concern over that. So maybe that's up the game.
Exactly.
Really,
sure.
Really interesting. All right, let's get to it. You ready for our own little match here? I'm going to take you to the boards and start punching you out.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it, because I ain't afraid either. So here's the deal, man. I'm from Boston, and of course the Bruins were, when I was growing up, my favorite team. Of course, today I still lean on the Bruins, man. One of the best playoff games I ever saw in my life was 2013 Blackhawks-Bruins 7-game series. And the reason that series was so good is, and this kind of ties in to what you just said about how that particular series, I'd never seen 7 games played where each minute from game one to the last second of game seven, it was the last 2 minutes of a game where one team was behind by a point with the goalie out and had to score to tie it to just even get any hope to go into overtime or win or go into a shootoff. I'd never seen a 7-game series played so fast, so furious, all the way. I was exhausted watching it. One of the best games of series I've ever seen. Did you see that series?
I did. And you know what? As you're talking, I'm looking it up now. 3 of those games actually went to overtime.
It was unbelievable. And if I remember correctly, no one ever led by more than a game. It was back and forth the whole time. I may not have that right. I don't think anyone ever went up 2 games. I think it was – they just kept trading. But even if someone did go up 2 games, it went 7. And again, I'm still tired just thinking about that series. I'd never seen anything like that before in my life.
You know what? Like, I have a group chat with my buddies on WhatsApp, and I remember my one friend in the group said, man, I hope this game never ends.
There you
and
go.
It was one of the overtime games, and I don't know, maybe it was a 6-5 game or something. But when he said that, I was watching. I'm like, oh my god, that's the perfect way to put it. Is like, I hope this game never ends.
You know what? It was also you can help me recall who the other team was, but what was the unbelievable game that the Americans played? I don't remember if it was against the Swiss or the Russians. Just a few years ago, I believe maybe it was the Canadian team. I think a guy named Thomas was in the net, and I don't know. I can't remember exactly which net was, but it was the same thing, and I think it was the Canadians against somebody, and we had, for those of you who don't know, the guy in goal was an American hockey player, is an American hockey player. I think his name is Thomas.
Tim Thomas.
Yeah, yeah. And in case you didn't know it, you know, most of these American players are Canadian.
Yeah.
It's when I began to realize, well, where are these guys from? Man, you know, they're all from Canada. They're all, that's because there's ice up where you live all the time. You know, we don't have ice all the time down here, but it's right cold up where you are, man. There's ice all over the place where you are. It's cold all the time. It's a natural thing to do up in Canada to gravitate toward hockey. Is that correct?
When I was growing up, not only were you playing winter hockey, you were playing summer hockey. I remember like kids coming from all over the world, really. And they couldn't believe that we had 7 ice hockey pads in one facility. I remember one kid, I don't know where he was from, but he was saying, we don't even have 7 in the whole city or the whole state. So it was like mid-July and we're in hockey rinks and, you know, it's 30 degrees outside. It's just crazy to think that I was doing that back when I was younger. And I mean, I loved it. I loved it. My dad loved watching me, so it worked out well. But yeah, Toronto hockey right now, any Canadian city hockey is just crazy.
I'm curious, man, what's cold to you? What at what temperature do you say, yeah, this is kind of cold. This is a cold day.
I would say minus 10 to 15. Yeah.
Celsius?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me look it up. That's okay. That's cold. That's 14 degrees. You made me think of Boston again. Because when I was a kid growing up in Boston, we did hit those temperatures in the winter. So I know what that's like. The reality is, though, is 14 isn't that bad if there's no wind. The thing about cold is that from freezing to some number, 10, 14 degrees, that's cold. But it's not bad if it's not windy.
Well, I'll give you an example. There was 1 year I was playing in Sweden, and we had a game just after Christmas up in the northern, in the Arctic Circle, north of the Arctic Circle. And I remember getting off the bus. And it was like minus 30, but it was like a dry cold. There was no wind. So you could handle it. Your face wasn't getting beat up by the wind and you had a nice warm jacket on, you had gloves on. It wasn't that bad. Going back to Toronto now, if it's minus 5 in Toronto sometimes and with the wind, you're just dying. You can't handle it for more than 30 seconds.
Just for everybody, minus 30 Celsius is minus 22. That's freaking cold. I just light a fire, stay inside. Yeah, that's what I. All right, so back to our battle on the boards here, man. I'm calling you out. I'm taking you on. We're going to have our own little fight here. I said I'd back up. I started with the Blackhawks-Boston game in 2013. That was mind-blowing. There was a period, and you can tell me if this rivalry is still going on. It probably is. But the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens, and certainly when I was growing up, were a major rivalry. Who won the Stanley Cup? Which is the big cup, man, was often decided between who won the playoff game between we'd face each other in the Stanley Cup. We're in different divisions, right? So we'd face off with each other in the Stanley Cup. And Bruins won a few times. There were, you know, there's a book called The Bad Boys here, something like that about the Boston Bruins. But I'm here to tell you, man, that the Canadians were a bunch of bad boys too. And I remember 2 games in particular where you guys were just like trying to put pucks up against an iron wall. And that iron wall was a guy named Kenny Dryden, who was like 6'6", something like that, just a big guy. And I think he was nicknamed the Octopus, if I remember correctly. Someone told me that once. I don't know if that's true or not, but this guy was like a... Not only was he a wall, he had agility and ability. Man, he could do a split on the ice like most goalies do. You goalies, man. The goalies in hockey, they look like gymnasts when they're warming up and they drop down, they spread both legs out. I'm thinking about all the injuries and the rehab I have to do if I try that one time. It's a regular thing for a goalie. Montreal Canadiens are a bunch of bad boys, tough team. They gave me the worst time of my life as a kid watching them beat the Bruins a few times. What made the Canadians so great in those days?
I just think they had a good nucleus of guys, starting from Ken Dryden. I can't remember who their core group was, but I remember watching with my dad when I was younger, and they would just steamroll teams. You know, they go on 5-6 game winning streaks and go into other teams' rinks and just manhandle them. My dad actually liked Ken Dryden a lot when I was younger. I don't know why, because he never really played goalie, but Ken Dryden was a Canadian, I believe. Yeah, he was. And my dad always just said, watch this guy play in net. Watch this guy play in net. It was just crazy to see that these guys would go into rinks and just dominate. Like, not even just
dominate. Like, dominate.
Just dominate. Like, just start to finish. And if it was only 1-0, the shots were 75-20. And it was just crazy.
Yeah, they had the three names. I looked them up here. The three names I remember now: Serge Savard, you know, great player. Claude Lerose, great player, and Peter Mahovlich, man, I haven't heard these names in a long time, those guys, they've always been good. During those years, they really stepped up and got crazy good. But, okay, so you, though, with that backdrop, actually tried out with the Boston Bruins. Tell me about it, man.
Well, rewind. I actually tried out for three NHL teams, Boston, Detroit, and Vancouver in that order. But Boston was cool. It was my first year after playing in the OHL, so I was a little bit starstruck. But it was just cool. I went to a tournament actually in Kitchener, Ontario, which is about an hour away from Toronto. And, you know, my parents came to watch, and it was cool. It was just a great experience. I knew it was – obviously, I was not going to make the team. I wasn't even drafted, so – I was just there to get experience and get exposure, and I thought I did a good job. You know, played a couple games, did well, and then went back to Ottawa to play my second year in the OHL, and it was just, I don't know, I thought it was really, really cool and a really good experience.
I mean, I can point to so many things as an athlete that, you know, I didn't do right, I did wrong, I could have done this better, could have done that better to make a big difference in my own career that for reasons not good, none of them are good, just youthful reasons, you know, I didn't do. Was there anything that you didn't do that could have made that situation different for you, that could have made it stick, or was it just we just not right at that time?
I would just say it was not right at that time. I wasn't drafted, which, you know, they had their draft picks they have to take care of first. And, you know, I was still young. I was only 17 or maybe 18 years old. I know I didn't expect to sign with them or even, you know, get anything with them. I was just there pretty much for fun and to just dip my toes in the water, really, and see what it was all about.
Yeah, I got it. You eventually left the OHL, right?
Yeah.
And you went to what hockey league?
The German league, the DEL, Deutsche Eishockey Liga.
All right. So what was that like? What was it like to go from Canada to Germany?
So I was actually pretty nervous about it. I'll never forget. I got a call on my birthday, May 20th, and they said, we want to give you a contract for next year. And I said, okay, great. I'm in. Yeah, you got to be here in 6 weeks. And I was like, what? So that was kind of a shock to me. But I went over with one of my best buddies. We played with the Marlies for our whole careers, and we played that 1 year in Markham together. So we went over together. I played in Dusseldorf, Germany, which was, you know, a great city, a city that I still love to go and visit whenever I chance I get. It was just, honestly, it was my first time playing pro. I went over there with an open mind. I went over there saying, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I can to just have fun and enjoy myself. We had a young team that year, actually. We had a really young team. And, you know, we went out a lot. We had a lot of fun off the ice. And I had a lot of fun on the ice. Had a really good year. I played a lot. And I think that really developed my game.
I got a question for you. It seems like the answer's obvious, but it may not be so obvious. Americans are very big on hockey. We like it. We play it. We grew up playing it. We're hockey players, but not as much as Canadians. Who is more passionate, in your experience, about playing the game, Americans or Canadians?
Without a doubt, Canadians.
Okay, because it's your world.
Yeah, it is our world. You know, I don't watch live TV from here because I'm 7 hours ahead, but everything on TSN is all hockey all the time. It's hilarious. I'll go on this computer after morning skate, and it's just always hockey.
Maybe,
you know, basketball and baseball are just not even there.
Maybe it's similar to American football. We used to just have Sunday football. Then we had Sunday and Monday night football. And then a few years ago, we got Sunday, Monday, and Thursday night football. You know, we love football, American football here in this country.
Yeah.
So what's the difference then in passion between Canadians and German hockey fanatics?
Good question. Germans, okay, so Germans are a lot like, I'm sure you've seen those soccer stadiums, those soccer games.
Yeah, they're insane.
Insane. And it's the same thing in a hockey rink. They encourage drink. Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. Now, is this a cultural thing where they just get crazy about stuff, or do they really love the game?
It's a good question. I don't know, but I think they do. Like, they do love the game because, you know, you talk to some of the fans after the game, and they know what they're talking about. They're not just rambling. They know what they're talking about. They understand the game. But our fans in Dusseldorf were great. They were crazy. We had they call it the standing section. There's not even any seats. And they just stand around. They drum the whole game. They're yelling and screaming. They're doing their chants all game. They're all drinking beers.
Very
all
tribal.
Game. It was honestly, it was amazing. And it's something I really miss because it was a lot of fun. And not just our rink. Like, most teams in Germany have really good fan bases, and they just love to make noise the whole game.
So you went from Germany to Sweden and played in that league too. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I played in the second league Sweden with hopes to get to the first league. I knew getting to the first league Sweden would be tough from Germany, so I said, okay.
So what's the difference, for those of us who don't know, second league and first league?
So the first league is arguably...
That's essentially pro, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they're both pro, but the Swedish first league is arguably the second best league after the NHL. there's a comparison to the KHL and the SHL. Depending on who you ask, it's the second best league. So I knew getting to Sweden, I guess, quotations, a step back into the second league with hopes of having a good year and then getting a contract into the first league, which is what I did. I went in the second league, got on a team that I knew would be playing a lot, had a good year, and was scouted to play for Brynäs in the first league.
All right. So I wanted to ask you then, I asked you the difference between American and German passions. Now let's compare all three. A Canadian there too. So American, Canadian, German, and Swedish. Now, I don't know if you can give an answer, an honest answer here, without having your homeland, you know, take you down if you don't say the right thing, right? We got a little bit of politics coming into this question here. But of the four, who are the craziest and most passionate to play for?
So in the arena, I would say the Germans are the craziest. And I'll give an example. You know, you go to a Leaf game, and for the first 5 minutes of every period, everyone's still eating or drinking, and then they come up and watch the rest of the period. In Germany, no one misses a beat. They're chanting the whole period. They're always going. It's a great experience in Germany.
It is fun performing in front of an audience, isn't it? As a spectator, you sort of take it all for granted. You're watching the game, and you know you're looking at it from the spectator point of view. But from the player point of view, you're performing.
I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier to get up for a game with 6,000 people yelling and screaming than it is any other night of the week. You know, it's a lot easier to just get your mind going and get your body going and just, I guess, wake up for the game.
And the audience, you know, let's face it, as an athlete, when you walk into the arena and that crowd is there, you get a sense of power from that. You stand taller, you stand bigger, you feel powerful from that. It's just a natural energy. It just, you surge from that power, and it's just like absorbing all of that energy into you, and you feel bigger than you are when you're in the arena with all that noise.
Oh, it's completely true. It's just, I love it. You know, I love it. That's one thing that, you know, I talk to guys who've retired over the years, and that's one thing that they miss.
When you were in Sweden, you got loaned to another team. What does that mean? I've never heard of such a thing. I don't think loans happen in the NHL, the major, you know, Major League Baseball, and any of our professional sports. How does that work in Sweden where someone says, hey, dude, you know, I could use Mark here. We've got a hole to fill over here. Can we borrow him for 2 weeks?
Exactly. So that's exactly what it is. They don't really do trades in Sweden. So what happened was this: for whatever reason in Brynäs, we weren't playing well or something was going on, and HV wanted to take over my contract. So they said, we'll take over the contract. And just for paperwork reasons, they kept it as a loan. It was just easier. It's kind of hard to explain, but basically they take over my contract and I'm loaned to them for the certain period of time, which ended up being the rest of the season.
A loan. Not alone as in is in no one around you, but alone.
Yeah.
That's a new one, man. That's like, I've never heard of that till I did my research here, and it was like, all right, well, I mean, how do they fill your position? I mean, what's going on while you're on loan?
They had some young guys they wanted to develop. That's kind of how they justified it. They brought in a younger kid and he got some playing time. So in the end, I guess everyone won and I got to play somewhat for a better team. I mean, I was happy on both sides. I went to a new team, which was new for me. I never done that before in my career. It was just a great experience. I adjusted well. I ended up playing well and finishing the season very well. So I was happy to do it.
Must be interesting to have played in all these different leagues. And it's all the same game, but there's still differences within the game in each of these countries. Must be really interesting to see when you get to another country how this is going to work.
So when I got to HV last year, HV 71, it was my first time moved to a different team halfway through the year. So it was like, okay, I'm so used to playing this system on the ice. I'm so used to having this guy with me on the ice. Now I have 20 new faces, a whole new system, you know, new coaches, new living. It was cool. I don't know. I loved it. I mean, I loved it. Every second of it.
How new can a system be? I mean, most of it, not always, there are exceptions, but not many exceptions. And so, again, correct me if I'm wrong here, but primarily on offense, the common thing, not always, is dumping it in and digging it out of the corner. True?
Yeah.
And if that's true, and I think it is true, and you just said yes, how different can it be? Other than just getting to know their personalities and how well they play their positions, it's the structure of the game is consistent across the board wherever you go. So how tough is it to adjust to a new team given that? And fix me up, you know, correct me where I'm wrong on this.
The biggest difference I found in changing teams, though, was with Brynäs, we were just a D-to-D, up-the-ice kind of team. Whereas with HV71, if we went D-to-D and we didn't like something, we'd go back to the D. And if I didn't like it, I'd go back to my other guy. So it was just more, it was a more puck possession game playing with HV 71. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that there was more puck possession. It was just more support all over the ice, I would say.
Got it. Okay. All right. So let's get to where you are now. You are in Latvia, correct?
Correct. Riga, Latvia.
So you play for the, let me, am I pronouncing this right? Is it Riga or Riga Dynamo?
Riga Dynamo.
And is the term defensive back used in that league?
I guess so. Yeah. Is that what the website says?
Yeah. I've never heard the term in my life before for hockey. It's, you know, defensive player is just what it is.
Yeah.
I just was wondering if that was a term. My bet is that whoever wrote this didn't know what they were writing. Have you ever heard the term before in hockey?
It's honestly probably just a translation thing on Google. It's, yeah, that's the way I look at it.
All right. So let's get to it then. How the hell did you end up in Latvia, man? And what's hot? So now we've got a fifth, you know, now we've got American, Canadian, Swedish, German, and Latvia. So what's it like playing in Latvia, and how crazy are those people?
So the fans here are great, not as crazy as Germany, but how I got here, ended the year with HV last year, HV 71. And my agent gave me a call and said, you know, we have some teams coming up or some offers. And I'm like, okay, let me know. I ended up going to Thailand for 2 weeks with my girlfriend, came back and he said, okay, we got a couple of teams here. You know, what do you think? And from the minute I signed 6 years ago, my goal was to play in the KHL. So as soon as Riga came up, I was all over it. You know, they had a solid offer. Some other teams were like, you know, 50-50, not sure yet. Riga had a solid offer and I was, all right, I'm done. I'm taking Riga for sure. To go from there, had a great summer, just kind of relaxed and got ready for the season. And I've been here now since July 9th, and it's been going great.
And how do Latvians relate to hockey? Obviously, they relate well enough because there's a league there. But give me that fan comparison compared to the other four.
They got the drums going here for sure. They have the drums, which is nice. I would say not as crazy as Germany, but a close second.
All right. Okay. So they're taking their cues from Germans.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, I played in Germany, obviously, and a lot of the stuff, even like in the country and just minor things that would be hard to explain to you, but is a lot like Germany, just on the ice and off the ice.
Let's move into what it takes to be a hockey player. What does training look like? Describe to me a typical mid-season training session through the week. So everything that you do, including how you eat, how you sleep, how you train, and the different types of training you do.
You play around between 2 and 3 games a week. There's sometimes 4 games a week, but that doesn't happen a lot. So let's go 2-3 times a week. You're going to play, you're going to have a day off. And then when you go back to practice the next day, you're going to have a morning workout, which is a full body workout for about an hour. Then you get on the ice for 45 minutes with the team. And I like to stay on the ice after to work my game and touch up my stuff. So I'm on the ice for about, I would say 1:15 on a regular day.
What does a typical day in the off season look like? What are you doing? Are you just sleeping, drinking, relaxing, and playing, or is there always training going on? What's that look like?
I would always tell people this: the best part about playing hockey is the off season, because I'm a morning guy. I love getting my stuff done in the morning, and my workout time in the summer is 7 a.m. I'm up at like 6, having my coffee, get my workout in. Towards the end of the summer, I got to skate in as well. And basically after that, you know, my parents have a pool in their backyard and I'm by the pool from as much sun as there is.
In Canada?
Yes, in Canada, Toronto.
So a nice hot summer day there in...
Yeah, well, in Toronto, we get up to, I would say, a good day is like 30 degrees.
So you're laying out in the pool in the backyard at 30 degrees and just collecting the sun, and you're cozy, right? And
letting the sun eat me alive. That's all I care about in the summer.
Do you do any cross-style training during the regular season? Obviously, the key thing you need to do is skate and play. You know, you've got to practice passing, you've got to practice board work, you've got to scrimmage all the time. Do you do any stair running, any mountain running, any pulling tires or pushing tires, any other cross training, or are you just mostly highly specific other than the full body? When you said full body workout earlier, I'm assuming that to mean you're in the weight room doing a full body workout.
Yeah. Mainly Olympic lifting. Some guys play soccer or they go play tennis. I don't, only because, or even with the mountain stuff or the running, I don't only because I don't want to risk getting injured. I'm very comfortable in the gym. I know what I got to do every day. I got to squat this. I got to deadlift this. I got to bench this. I got to do this many chin-ups. My days are very just planned strategically for me. Just for the risk of injury, I don't really do anything else. It's not wrong. Some guys do. I just don't.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that the two primary things you have to have. I mean, it's so much. It is a full body sport. You got to be strong everywhere, and there's a lot of strength and a lot of skill involved in this sport. Tremendous skill. But if I had to single out two things, to me, it would be obviously cardio, because you guys are just sprinting up and down the ice, and quads. Am I in range here, or is it something else?
You're absolutely right. And to do quads, I just do the trap bar deadlifts probably twice a week, and you mix in the upper body workouts. But for sure, we do a lot of skating and a lot of bike rides to keep conditioned.
You've lived in Europe for like 6 years now, right?
Yeah.
6 years. What's the difference between living in Europe and Canada? Obviously, there are some big differences, and you're a big boy now. You can tell us straight up, where would you prefer to live?
So I have a girlfriend from Sweden. She thinks that I want to settle down there, but I love Toronto. I love Canada. I'm a big city guy. The biggest difference, though, is that Europeans are a lot less stressed than North Americans.
Yeah, it's because they're taking siestas more often than us.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. Everyone's just so much more relaxed. Everyone's so much more friendly, and they're just way more less stressed here. It's unbelievable.
Well, we'll just leave that at that. So are you enjoying that stress-free world?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I live right downtown in Riga, and, you know, I got like a bunch of coffee shops, but a bunch of restaurants around me, and it's just nice to get out and go for a walk and grab a coffee or, you know, grab some lunch.
What city has stood out for you as the most pleasant to live in?
I've lived Sweden, which is where I played for Brynäs. I was there for 2.5, almost 3 years. I got to know so many great people. And it's a small city, actually. It's only about 100,000. But I lived in a great spot. You know, they had this one street with all the restaurants and all the bars. I just loved it. You know, I was up there actually last week visiting my girlfriend. And it just brought back so many great memories. I really loved it up there.
You have a personality that's comedic. And you remind me a little bit of a guy I know named Kevin Millar. Kevin is a Boston Red Sox player. He was the guy who sparked the comeback in the bottom of the ninth inning several years back against the New York Yankees when the Red Sox were down 0-3. And they ended up sweeping, setting all kinds of crazy records in the process and winning the World Series that year, down 0-3 and sweeping the Yankees. Four straight from that point, and then went on to win the World Series, sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals in four straight. Eight straight wins. And on that team, as I said, was a guy named Kevin Millar who started that comeback in the bottom of the ninth in Game 3. Now, he is the team's comedian. He was always relaxed, always trying to find a way to keep the team upbeat, positive, and he just wouldn't let anything bring them down. And Poppy, who's the big boy on that team, said that when he thinks of the victory that year, that whole season and how it went in the ultimate World Series win, he thinks of Kevin Millar, which made me think of you because you're a funny guy and you get your teammates to lighten up and joke around to get them to relax, you know, during a game, even though you're a fighter. I mean, you have this interesting, you know, polar sides to you, because one side's ready to fight and you're the leader in fighting penalty minutes. And on the other hand, you're a funny guy that gets your team to lighten up as well. Tell me about that side of you and then also explain to me these polar opposites and how they exist in the same person.
I don't know when it started, but my first couple of years in the OHL was kind of quiet. And then I guess I got comfortable. I don't know, just before games now, I'm a loud guy in the room, whether it's funny or whether it's serious. I mean, it's usually funny, keep the room loose. I just want guys to not be tense before a game. If it has to be me or someone else to lighten the mood up, I'm glad to do it, like I said. And the whole polar opposite thing, you couldn't be more right. There's two different guys. There's one guy on the bench, but as soon as I hit that ice, I like to say no one's safe. You know, if that puck's going into my corner and you're going to go into it with me, you know, it's going to be a battle to get out of it. But then, you know, I get back to the bench and we'll talk about the shift and I'll make a joke. So it's just, it's funny that you say that the opposites, because it's, that's what hockey is. It's, you know, once you're on the ice, it's all business. And once you're off the ice, you got to keep it loose.
Yeah, it's all business on the ice. And when the game's over, you look at the guy you pounded out and said, hey, dude, don't take it personally. It was just business.
Exactly.
Have you ever gone into the opposing locker room after having done something that you regretted doing and just got the guy who you wished you had not done what you've done to and say, hey, dude, I don't know what happened. Or made a phone call later or reached out to someone and said, dude, I don't know what happened there. I'm sorry. It shouldn't happen that way.
So there was my first year in Germany. We were in overtime. I thought it was a clean hit, but I hit a guy and he got knocked out and he ended up falling on his face and cutting up his chin or something. So right away he got he was actually stretchered off the ice. And I was like, okay, I feel kind of bad now, because that's my first time I've ever seen it before. And so I walked into the room. I'm like, listen, man, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean to hurt you, obviously. And he was talking. He was responsive, thank God. He goes, yeah, don't worry about it. That was nice. That's probably the only time it's ever happened in my life. But it was tough. It was weird.
You're a highly skilled player to be a professional. You have to be good to get to the pros at any level and get paid, which you do. Highly skilled, great defensive player. You're a fighter and you're a comedian. You know how to get your team to relax. And to be that person, you have to be respected, because to be someone who people will listen to means you have power, and that people respect you, which they do. What do you bring to new people coming up, coming onto a team younger than you? What do you bring to them? What is the main thing you bring in terms of, hey, let me school you a bit. Let me give you some education. Here's how you play this game in this league. What do you bring to them?
Honestly, I make them feel as comfortable as possible. I go right up to them and I'll say, hey, man, you know, we need you. We know it's nice of you to be up here with us. Enjoy it, but we need you. If you need anything, come talk to me. Come talk to the older guys. We'll help you out and we'll set you up. But basically, I try to be as friendly as possible and try to give them the most confidence as possible being up with us, because if they're playing well, our team's playing well, and then we're winning. I try to just go up there and just give them positive affirmations.
Basically, you act as an elder statesman.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess so. Sure.
Yeah, I'm here. This is what it's about here. I'm here. If you need anything, you need to know something, you come and ask, because I've been here, I've done that, and I probably have the answer. And if I don't, I know how to get it.
Yeah, and at the same time, I've been in a situation where I've gotten to a team when I was younger, and there was no direction, and I was lost. So I know the feeling of like, okay, what the hell's going on? Like, why is no one talking to me? Like, why am I even here? I try to avoid them thinking that right away. You know, I like to think that I do a good job of it, because just last year we had a young goalie come up and play for us in Sweden, and I did whatever I could to make him feel good, and he ended up playing really well for us. I think he went 3-0 for us. So he actually came up to me one night after a game and said, you know, I really appreciate you looking out for me. And it felt good for me to hear that, because no one's ever told me thanks. And I don't expect a thank you by any means, but to hear it is kind of nice.
You know, in business, people will ask me, how do I make myself an asset to my organization? And I say, look, it's really plain. You just do a couple of things. First of all, you have to know what you're doing. Let's just assume you do. So moving past that, show up early, stay a little later. Don't ever let the boss stay longer than you, unless that guy's crazy and stays till 10 p.m. I mean, but show up early, stay late, and every day put your name stamp on it, and you will be an asset to the organization. Do a good job. Don't just show up for the check. So many people in sports show up for the check. They're good enough that they can do that and get away with it for a long time. That's no way to play the game, and it's no way to put your name stamp on anything. So with that backdrop, how do you make yourself an asset to your organization?
I'm in the room usually first or second every morning. Like I said earlier, I stay on the ice after to work my game, make sure I'm sharp, and just being a good team guy in the room, laughing around with the boys and going for lunch with the guys and making sure that, you know, everyone's comfortable and everyone's having a good time. And, you know, it's tough to go to the rink every day in a bad mood. So, you know, I don't live with a guy, but we live together in the same building, and we try to keep the mood light, and we're both very positive every day. So that's basically how I would say I keep the, whatever you said there, the
asset. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it. Sorry.
That's how you, yeah, no problem at all. I forget stuff all the time. So welcome to the club. See, it doesn't matter what age you are, man. We're always forgetting stuff. It's too much to remember here. What is something about you that we haven't talked about that would surprise people about you? We know you're a great, great professional hockey player, great skilled defenseman, all these other things we talked about. But what is something notable about you that most people don't know?
Okay, I guess on a more serious note, I guess, I take school online. A lot of guys in the pros, they go from the OHL right to the NHL, and, you know, they're making millions of dollars. Unfortunately, I'm not making millions of dollars. So I go to school online throughout the Baska, and yeah, I guess that's one thing that you wouldn't notice about me from my hockey DB page or my elite prospects page is, you know.
Yeah, good. That's good, good. What are you studying?
Just business right now.
What major in business? What segment is what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I'll probably get into marketing. I think that's the one I'm looking into.
Good, very good. Business is a lot of fun. It's not too different than sports, because you make your move from the pros over to business. The same passion, the same energy, same excitement. And it's the same work ethic for those people who really succeed, whether they've been professional sports or not. It's still the same kind of stuff that makes people successful, you know. You know, athletes, especially during their competitive years and even after their competitive years, identify as an athlete. That's who you are. That's what you are. Lifelong athletes competing in team sports never seem to struggle to define themselves as an individual athlete. That's their identity. Have you ever struggled with your identity as an athlete? Has anything ever put that into question, or do you identify in some other way?
No, I love what I do. And, you know, if anyone asks me in the summer what I'm doing or what I do for a living, I have no problem telling them I'm a hockey player. I'm a pro hockey player. I usually get a positive response, but there are people who, you know, they are kind of shocked, like, oh, you don't work for a living? Like, what do you mean you play hockey? So it's something that I love doing, like I said, and I have no problem telling people about it.
Because it's such an aggressive sport, do you have to do anything other than be comedic before a game, or when you choose to be comedic, to get ready for a game, to get into the competitive headspace? Because you know it's going to be rough out there. You know that's going to be bumping. You know there may be a fight. Is there anything in particular you do?
I would just say I'm pretty loose in the room throughout the whole getting ready process. You know, in warmups, I love being loud and kind of singing along to the music. I kind of just turn it on or turn it off for the national anthems. You know, you have 3 to 4 minutes of quietness, and that's when I kind of zone in and just say, okay, time to get focused, time to get ready for the game. And that's when I just lock in and zone in for the night and just get my game ready.
You're an expressive guy when you score. You really celebrate, don't you?
Yeah. And you know what? My reasoning for it is, you know, I don't score very often. So when I do, I'm going to get excited. And if it bothers you, too bad, you know, because people, not that everyone gets mad about it, but some of the boys always they razz me about it. I'm like, listen, man, I don't score like you. I don't score 50 a year. I don't even score 20 a year. So if I score once or twice in a season, I'm going to go crazy. Deal with it, you know?
I kind of know. A couple more questions for you, and we'll let you do some decompressing because I know. Well, when was your last workout? How many hours ago was your last workout?
We had a tough one today. Yeah. We had a lift this morning, and then we had a pretty tough skate today. So we're actually on a national team break, so we had about 10 days between games. So we're just practicing right now, just getting ready for the next coming games.
What do you feel is the hardest part about this particular path you've chosen? Did you choose the path, or did the path choose you, or was it a – yeah, tell me about that.
It's a good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that before. Before I played in Germany, the plan was to commit to university and just play university hockey for 4 years and then go to work. Then I got a call from Germany, and from there, I guess my life really changed. I would just say living overseas, the hardest part, and not being home for 8 months of the year and not seeing your family. I mean, my family comes to visit, but you know, my uncle and aunt just had a baby boy. I'm just seeing him on FaceTime. So that stuff kind of sucks. And it's just tough living away from home, that just this far from home.
Yeah. As you migrated into this sport, did you choose it or did it choose you? Obviously you were playing, right? But you were doing probably other sports and other things. And as a young guy, lots of things were competing for your attention.
I was just better at hockey than anything else. I played soccer. I played baseball. I'm not very good at either of those. My friends, actually, my one good friend, they all joke about how I'm the least athletic hockey player ever because I'm a good hockey player, but I'm terrible at golf. I'm terrible at baseball. I'm a terrible athlete, I guess you could say. So hockey was my real calling. And, you know, it's just taking to where I am today.
Well, you're a phenomenal athlete, actually. What you're saying is you're just not an all-around athlete. But
there you go. Yeah.
I think we got to correct that because you're phenomenally good at what you do. I love asking this question here. Don't always ask it. But if you had to pick one moment in your career, just one, because I really relate to this because I can see so many memories when I even ask the question for myself. But let me put it to you. If you had one moment in your career that would always bring a smile to your face, what would that moment be as a player?
My first year in the first league, Sweden, I never scored an overtime goal before in my life, and I'll never forget the play. It was 3-on-3 overtime, jumped in the rush, got a pass from our forward, and I scored in OT, and I mean, it was awesome. You know, it was great. It's something that I will always remember.
It's nothing like being responsible in the end analysis for a win in overtime,
yeah,
where the pressure is on it. I mean, it's such an edgy moment to be in overtime because that's it. Whoever scores first, it's over. It's super intense. And going back to the Bruins Blackhawks series we talked about earlier, you said 3 of them were overtime. So not only was every minute of that series played the way I described earlier, but when you got to overtime, it quadrupled in intensity. So it was tough enough just to watch it. I was wearing out, you know, out of breath just watching the game, but the overtimes were insane. And the individual who wins that overtime has a sense of joy and exaltation that's hard to understand unless you've done it, and you've done it.
Yeah, and it was exactly like you said. You know, the pressure's on and the all eyes are on, and there's 60 minutes in a game. You might not pay attention, but everyone is watching in overtime. It was a great experience, and it was so cool to score. And I hope I can do it again someday soon.
Yeah, you will. Just tell your boys to don't win the game in the third period when you have the opportunity to do it, and just push it to overtime. Just take it there. You could do it. No one's going to do that. None of us won overtime. What advice do you have for someone that wants to be a hockey player, that's playing and wants to go there?
I would just say make sure you enjoy it, because especially at a young age, a lot of these, I see it now a lot more, is that these parents, they push their kids to play and play and play. And I would just say, you know what, make sure you enjoy it. Make sure it's something you can see yourself doing, especially if you're a young kid. I don't know how young you are now, but if you're a young kid, take the summer off. Don't be playing the summer hockey. I did it. Not that I regret it. It's just enjoy your summer. Play other sports. You know, just enjoy yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. That's another thing I would really emphasize, is when I was younger, I used to be so hard on myself after a tough game. And, you know, it's not going to change. You know, just chill, relax, and enjoy yourself.
All right, that's great advice. What can we expect to see from Mark Anthony Zanetti, the Mafia Italian from Canada? What can we expect to see from you in the next few years here? What does the five-year picture look like? You know, what are you're studying business and marketing. And so what does a five-year plan look like? When do you think you might exit hockey, move into business? You know, what can we expect to see from you in the next several years? What's happening?
I'll be 28 next year, so I'm getting old. I'm getting there. So my original plan was to stop playing by 35. So that's 7 more years of hockey. And just to, you know, I don't know where I'll play, but like I said, I want to enjoy it. Right now I'm enjoying it. If it gets to the point where I'm not enjoying it in this league, maybe I'll go somewhere else to play, or maybe I'll just stop altogether. But right now I love it. I love the game. I love everything about it. And from there, I'll just probably go back to Toronto after my hockey career and start up in business or get into coaching and take it as it comes.
That's a great answer, man. That's a great answer. Mark, it's such a pleasure talking with you, man. Mark Anthony Zanetti, what a blast. What a good guy. What a talent. And I'm just going to go out on a very short limb here and say right now, Latvia, and in the coming years, we'll see him in the NHL. So pay attention. Remember the name. We're going to see him move up. 7 years to go, he says, roughly, to play. And somewhere between now and those 7 years, we're going to see him playing in America, probably for the Boston Bruins, scoring on my behalf.
In overtime.
In overtime and at the highest level, because you are a high-level guy. You're a great guy, a lot of fun, and I've really enjoyed talking with you today. And I really appreciate you taking your time out of your tough schedule, professional life
there. I'm curious about the mindset,
spend some time
the sports.
With us. I really want to talk, chat with you, get to know you a little better, and hear what it's like to be a professional hockey player.
Yeah, this was awesome. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun, and anytime you need me, I'm happy to come on and, you know, talk about hockey, talk about other stuff. I don't care. I love it. No problem.
Yeah, we'll definitely have a redo here, because not only will you make the NHL for the Bruins, scoring on my behalf, sometime you're going to win that overtime game. And when it happens, you got to let me know, and we'll do
all
a
right,
quick clip.
Good.
You know, we'll do a quick 20-minute say, walk us through that, man. Tell us what that was all about, because every athlete dreams of being the anchor on the relay that comes from behind the wind, to throw the Hail Mary to win the Super Bowl. I've seen that happen. You know, and to be the guy who wins in overtime in any sport, that's not only the big dream to make it to the pros, but once you make it there, the expectation goes even higher for yourself. You want to have that moment.
Yeah, totally,
right?
Agree. And you're exactly right.
So we're all going to pull that for you, that you have that moment, because we want you to feel that joy, and we want to hear it told to us by you, what it was like
Absolutely.
To go through that. All right, brother, man. What a blast. Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll be in touch, man. We'll talk soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, you take care.